Welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 15, the only comic book podcast that is graded near mint or mint. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your mint co-host, Dave McRae.
How are you, Richard? Makes me near mint.
That's right.
I was taken out of my bag once to look at, and I have a small thumbprint in the top right-hand corner.
And that just devalued you completely.
I know. I'd forever be ashamed of that.
Fair enough. How are you, Richard?
I'm really good, David. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired from the week, but I'm good.
I know it's the end of a long week. People don't realize that we record these things at odd hours.
Odd hours, indeed.
But it's been a long week, and it's been a lot of stuff going on in the world of comics this week. This week we bring you DC's news that they're bringing back the annual.
That's good because I was missing it.
Well, no, I wasn't really missing it either. But they're bringing back the first annuals for the New 52. Arcana launch film-ready comics. Smallville Season 11. Yes, really, Smallville Season 11. The Battle of the Ghost Riders. And Garth Ennis, children's author?
That doesn't make sense.
I don't. I'll get onto that one later. Then in movie news, we talk the Amazing Spider-Man footage, of course. The Walking Dead's Robert Kirkman gets sued. And like it or not, the Wolverine gets a release date.
About time.
But first, David, I think it's time for our vintage clip of the week.
Oh, hit me with it.
My partner went out the door as soon as the alarm went off. You don't have to worry about me, though. I'm not going to run away.
You mean you deliberately stayed when you could have gotten away?
Well, I've never done anything like this before, Superman. It was all like a dream until that alarm went off and woke me up. Well, I realized that I can run from the police, but I can't run for myself.
It's easy to see that you're new at this sort of thing. Why did you do it?
Why? That's what I keep asking myself. Sure, it was the money, but it went deeper than that. I should have learned how to save and handle money a long time ago. Then this wouldn't have happened.
Well, I'm sorry it did, but at least you've learned something very important.
Well, pretty bad way to learn it, don't you think? Well, here they come, Superman. Gee, I feel a little better for having someone to talk to. Thanks.
It's all right, son. Now, you can do me a favor. Don't tell them I was here.
Sure.
Why? Why? Why did I do it? Why?
Don't tell anyone I was here, Superman, because Superman doesn't like attention.
Yeah, what's that all about? Since when is he?
And then he promptly climbs out the window and jumps safely to the floor, which is about half a meter below.
And all I can say is I agree with the sentiment. So, Richard, I feel much better now. I've had somebody talk to.
It's great. It was actually a government-funded film from the 1950s called Stamp Day for Superman. It's available in the public domain. You can find it on, you know, archive.org. You can find it on YouTube quite readily. It was available on a few of the Warner DVDs that they put out in the last few years, right, as well. But it's great. It goes for about 18 minutes if you can find it. But it's really, and it's that kind of fit unfit Superman, you know, where it looks like he's holding his gut in the whole time,
which was most of the series. I love the old Superman series. Don't get me wrong; I was a big fan when I was a kid.
Now, David, normally we'd go on to what we've been reading, but one of the things we've been reading this week is a bit of feedback.
Yes. Now, I thought this was one of the nicest things I've read in a long time, so I thought we'd just read this out very quickly. This is some feedback on the Behind the Panels iTunes page, actually, and it was from SCA Kenny G. I'm not sure what the SCA stands for, and I'm assuming Kenny G's because he's a fan of the, I don't know, the musical person? No.
Let's just say that it stands for super cool and awesome.
I think so after this. So I'll just read this out very quickly, and it's kind of like patting ourselves on the back, but, you know, sometimes it's nice to have that. He writes, want all the latest happenings in the comic book multiverse? Then listen no further than Behind the Panels, your one-stop podcast download with Richard and David. This podcast literally hits the ground running from the start of each show. No long, winding, drawn-out intros from giggling hosts who just talk about themselves for 20 minutes? No. Behind the Panels is all about the comic book biz, and like the title of the show suggests, Behind the Panels is what you get and more. Oh, except
sorry, we are actually talking about ourselves now.
I was going to say, we kind of defeated the sentence with this little segment, but that's all right. Sure, there are dozens of other comic podcasts to listen to and download from. All have similar information, dirt, gossip, and rumors, but it is the hosts that make the show. It's Behind the Panels, likable hosts, Richard Gray and David McVeigh. Hey, that's us. That get you listening intently to the show.
That's my name there.
And leave you wanting to hear more and more while getting a good hearted chuckle between segments. That's usually us chuckling, though. That's right. This is a podcast everyone can listen to. There's no need to worry about the lads dropping foul language, except for me every now and again. I always do try and beep it out. Lads dropping foul language, inappropriate for the young ones who like to listen in. David and Richard are all about good, wholesome fun whilst keeping us all up to date with what's happening within the industry of comics. Almost over. In short, Behind the Panels is the podcast to listen to if you have any sort of small affinity for comic books. You don't need to be an avid reader of recent titles either to get enjoyment from the show. It covers all the basics, and after each show, you'll be up to date with what's happening within the comic book world, even if you're like me and haven't read a comic since 1998. Thanks, Richard and David. Keep the Behind the Panels podcast coming, Kenny G.
We certainly will with praise like that, Kenny G. Thank you so much.
It's amazing. Thank you so much for that. I'm usually you get 4 stars and yeah, it's cool. You know, but that was just a wonderful, wonderful feedback. And we should remind people, if they want to leave feedback like that, just look for our show on iTunes. And of course, if you're logged in iTunes user, you can just leave feedback. And we always do love to get that feedback. It helps us move up the charts as well.
Particularly if you're going to leave feedback like that.
Absolutely. And you'll get read on the show.
So, David, what else have you been reading apart from high praise for us?
I'm ashamed to admit it, Richard. I got a confession to make this week.
Testify, David.
I'm actually kind of starting to dig Frankenstein, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I've been saying this for a while, though. I haven't minded it too
much. I know, and I've been really hard on it. And just in the last couple of issues, it's really kind of grabbed me, and I went, this isn't right. Why am I liking this? I feel dirty. But it is actually getting kind of interesting, and I'm actually kind of liking the Frankenstein character.
Yeah, look, I think that's one of the appeals, and they're a good little group of characters. They're intriguing. I love them all, and I think it's... It would be a shame because I have a feeling it'd be one of those books that might end up being on the outs after a while. But it's got potential.
And what I think is interesting is the closest relative to that book would be OMAC. And there is actually just recently a crossover issue, which actually made my IQ drop. But but it's funny because OMAC has been canceled and Frankenstein hasn't. So there is something a little bit more to Frankenstein than OMAC.
Yeah, and Frankenstein's being written by the same guy who's writing Animal Man at the moment.
Yeah, which you're kind of digging and I'm kind of on the fence with at the moment. I kind of like the beginning of Animal Man. It's kind of losing me.
Well, Animal Man is when we move into the news, Animal Man's one of the books that's getting an annual.
Yeah, so it's obviously got an audience.
Yeah, so clearly it's got there. And as you said once before, it's a book that's... Grant Morrison obviously revitalized and brought to a whole new generation. So it's clearly got a fan base there.
Cool. I've also been, of course, catching up with the New 52 because the issue sixes are starting to roll around. I got to say, I just read the latest Superboy, which is a comic book which is I'm hot and cold on. It's really kind of frustrating because there are when they're crossing over, it's really interesting. When they're not, I'm not really interested. And he recently just had a big crossover issue with the Teen Titans. And that was kind of interesting. And this month, he's actually just had a big crossover with Supergirl, which is actually a really good issue because Kara, once again, still can't speak English. She only speaks Kryptonian, saw his S from space, because if you've been reading Supergirl, you'll know why she's in space, and has come down to figure out what's going on and is mortified to find out that he's a clone. Because in this new universe, apparently on Krypton, clones were basically super bad people.
Yeah.
And so she's like, you know, you will turn evil. You will be bad. It doesn't matter what you think you are now. You will be bad because you're a clone. She's very cold on it. And if you're wondering how they communicate, he touches her at one point and immediately learns how to speak Kryptonian.
That's a handy skill.
It is. I mean, this whole ability with his mind trick is becoming the MacGuffin of the comic book, though. Basically, he can seem to do anything.
Yeah, well, telekinesis does give you... I mean, we saw Chronicle recently, and telekinesis did seem to give them a wide range of powers, which I think I'd like. If I was going to have superpowers, I'd go for the telekinesis. I have to finally admit to getting into... Oh, no, it's not really I have to admit, because I love Green Arrow, but I've been saying that I've been having trouble getting into it, but I finally got around to issue 6, and it is taking a turn for the better, and it could just be that there's a new writer on it.
It's important to note that from issue 7 onwards, a completely new team.
New team, and it's looking good, because apparently they're going to take it, it's going to be sort of Green Arrow International.
Yay!
and it'd be globetrotting and doing all sorts of things. No, but I really liked. I really sort of got into with 6. You could see the potential of him having that team and working with them and doing things, because it felt a little bit too much generic superhero to start with. And now it kind of you seem to have gotten into the rhythm of having that little group of people. Mm. And I think that's the thing of the long form kind of medium where the serial format. You do have to spend time with any comic for at least a couple of issues just to get the rhythm of it, because you can't get all those character nuances in one issue. And I think that's the thing I'm learning the most reading so many comics a month now.
Yeah, it's actually I think the New 52 is really an interesting experiment. It's that I'm really kind of digging at the moment, because it's really interesting that we have this amazing impact of the issue ones, and you go good, 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 bad, crap, good, 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 crap, right? And then as they're going through, we're now running into our issue 6s, and some of them are actually getting better. Some of them are actually kind of falling down a little bit. Some of them you're going, oh, I should have given that more time. They're all starting to gel together, though. It's actually starting to feel like a universe.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and I think that's probably the biggest achievement that DC's managed to do that no one else has done for the longest time, is actually, even though there are elements of the old universe and there are elements of a new universe, they've actually, from scratch, they've built up this cohesive thing at the same time. Yeah. And you really are, as you said, in Green Arrow, you're getting hints that he's just starting to realize there are other heroes. And over in Justice League, which is a few months ahead, they're starting to get, people are starting to come and be interested in joining their little team, and which we'll see in the next couple of issues.
And we're starting to piece together the timelines, because, like we said, we said with Green Arrow, the fact that he said there's other superheroes in that issue 5, issue 6. So we're starting to pinpoint where his timeline falls in the greater scheme of things. And with the latest Frankenstein Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
he
just said, now that superheroes are starting to become discovered, or superpower people are starting to become discovered, and they have this discussion, you sit there and go, okay, so you're actually putting yourself at the birth of the Justice League period.
Yeah. Yeah?
So
yeah,
we're actually starting to see the timelines.
Yeah, it's really good. The other things I've been enjoying reading, a couple of the Vertigo titles, I really like American Vampire, and iZombie. I've sort of had an on-off relationship with it, but I keep getting it because for the art, basically. Hmm. I really love Mike Allred's stuff, so I always have since he did Madman and X-Force and all those kind of books, and Red Rocket 7. You know, he's always been my favorite Mormon.
I'm having a lot of trouble getting into American Vampire. I've tried a couple of times.
It is slow going, but I kind of just like the world. But in terms of the Western books that are out at the moment, I'm preferring All-Star Western over at DC.
Fair enough. Okay. Mm. Very interesting. I've also just started reading. I haven't read it yet, but I've just started reading the first issue of, once again, this Marvel reboot that we're doing, this stealth reboot. The beginnings of, I think it's about 5 issues in The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It looks kind of interesting. The problem I've always had with the Hulk is I think he's a great character in other books. I've always had a bit of trouble getting into his own book.
Which is why I think he'll be much better in the Avengers film than he ever was in his 2 individual films. Because once the Hulk hulks out, you lose the character that you've grown to enjoy, which is Bruce Banner. He's far more interesting than the Hulk.
Mm, exactly. And you can only put up with so much smashing after a while.
Exactly. But that's kind of what the fanboys want. So it's really hard to kind of find that balance. David, I think it's time for we should move on to some comic news.
All right.
What a scoop!
Boy, was that loud or what?
that was quite loud. It's given me the energy to move on for the next section. Now, I mentioned, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the New 52 is finally seeing some annuals. Now, the annual used to be a great tradition in the DCU.
And still is in the Marvel universe. We're still seeing it.
Yeah. I remember because when I was collecting a lot more Marvel, and I'm starting to again now, I'm starting to notice that the annual is still a big thing over there. But it used to be a big thing, like the bumper-sized issues or the giant-sized issues. Mm. And from around the issue nines, they'll be bringing three annuals out. It'll be one for Batman, one for Teen Titans, and one for Animal Man. And the Batman one's got a lot of people excited because it's going to be called it's going to feature Mr. Freeze.
Well, it's about time they brought back some of the classic bad guys.
Yeah, and it's the first time he's been in DC's New 52 continuity, and apparently it's going to fit in with the big Court of Owls storyline that's overarching everything.
That's
interesting. It's interesting that Animal Man is one of the other ones too, because it's obviously not one of the biggest titles out there, but clearly it's part of, as we were saying before, there's some crossovers happening.
Yeah,
there's one happening with Animal Man and Swamp Thing, and apparently he's saying it's going to serve as a prequel to a bigger crossover storyline between those two books.
Interesting. I also find it interesting that there's no annual for Superman.
Yeah, I found that too. But these are the first ones in May. We might end up having another lot of annuals in June, July, August.
And now, all right, I just want to throw this one out there just as a wild speculation. But do you find it interesting that we're doing annuals at issue 9? Wouldn't you think they'd come after issue 12?
Look, I've learned not to question anything in the New 52, don't
Fair enough. All right, what's next?
The next thing is a story that I got from Deadline, but it's been appearing in a few places. It's Bendis Spink and Arcana have launched a series of film-friendly comic lines.
Can we say
cash? Now, it's Bendis Spink and Sean Patrick O'Reilly's Arcana comics are launching what they're calling Arcana Bendis Spink comics, strangely enough. Mm. And it's basically comics that are published under the Arcana brand. But the idea is they're setting up comics to be ready to actually be produced into movies.
Yeah, as I say, can we say cash in?
Yeah, basically the cash in. Some of the titles they've got here include Legacy, The Order, The Numbered, Bishop Below, Target Earth, The Hunt, War of the Gods, Dime Detectives, Foretold, Kill on Sight, Untouchable. My favorite title, Countdown to Armageddon.
These all sound like Saturday night sci-fi channel bad movies.
Yeah, look, I could go up on this. Heaps of them. It's like Triangle, Langley High. Yeah, Langley High is a student at Langley High, a school located less than 2 miles away from the CIA headquarters in Virginia. I don't need to read anymore. You know exactly where that's going.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I like Target Earth.
Target Earth. I like that. Is there anything with something of doom in there?
No, but it's
like
Kill on Sight. Like I love Kill on Sight. Kill on Sight sounds like a Steven Seagal movie.
It does.
Oh, man, these are quality. You know what? This is so cynical because, I mean, let's face it. What they're basically doing is they're giving filmmakers a script and storyboards. In comic book form. The problem is these are what they fail to realize is the reason why they option comic books and actually make a movie out of them is because they have some kind of value to the marketplace.
And they've also got, like, in some cases, they've got 60, 70 years worth of stories to draw from.
Exactly, my point. And you look at it and you go, just by writing comic books doesn't mean filmmakers are going to go, oh, yeah, I got to make a movie of that.
Look, you know, it's an interesting attempt, but on the other side of the scale, we've got DC announcing that they're turning one of their recent television hits into a comic book.
I think they've taken a page out of Joss Whedon's book here.
I think so too, and they've announced that they're going to be Smallville Season 11 as a digital weekly comic.
You know, I'll read it, I'll have a look at it, because Smallville, the season finale of Smallville, series finale of Smallville, I should say, actually left me a little bit cold.
Yeah, but in some ways, like, you know, it left you there going, right, well, he becomes Superman now, so go and buy a Superman comic.
Oh, yeah, kind of, but, you know, I'd like to see those characters, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
The way that Smallville had set it up, and you sit down and go, I wanted him to become Superman earlier in the episode. We needed to have him be Superman.
Yeah.
And we didn't get a chance to actually get that satisfaction. After going 10 years, we didn't get the satisfaction of even getting a clear view of him as Superman.
It's true. Well, I mean, they've made up for that. The promo image for this has a very clear picture of Superman in there, and it's going to be, as I said, it's a weekly digital, and it'll be collected later in print versions. This is the fourth DC series to debut digitally, behind Beyond the Fringe, Justice League Beyond, and Batman Arkham City.
Oh, Justice League Beyond, one of these digital series. I was wondering about that. I saw it kicking around, and I went, that's interesting. Why don't I know that title?
Yeah, it was one of, and I think we announced this a few episodes back when it would be one of those things that were going to be born digital and then later released in print as collections. So yeah. It's interesting strategy from DC, and I think it's a good way to get people into the digital comics because there might be people who are just television fans who want to start reading comics want to spend some more time with those characters. It might be a good way to get them to read comics, and then that might segue them over to getting some of the more mainstream DC comics digitally.
Yeah, and as I said, it's worked for Joss Whedon very well. So
yeah, Buffy seasons 8 and 9, halfway through season 9 now, and it's apparently getting quite controversial over there.
Interesting. I think we'll be looking at that as a pick coming up very soon.
I think so too.
I think so. All right, what's next?
Next is Ghost Rider. As we know, is coming out as a film this year, but the comic was created back in 1972 by a gentleman by the name of Friedrich. And he was alleging, or Gary Friedrich, I should say, is his full name. He alleged that the first appearance of Ghost Rider, which was in Marvel Spotlight number 5 in 1972, was never registered with the US Copyright Office.
We've heard about this before, haven't we?
This is an ongoing case. This has been going at least since 2007.
No, I was thinking we talked about a couple of weeks ago the fact that DC never registered their logo, remember?
That's right.
People have got to get better at this.
Well, this particular case has been going on since 2007, and Marvel countersued in 2010 because this guy had actually been using the Ghost Rider name and image to trade in posters, T-shirts, and cards and so forth at comic conventions. Mm-hmm. Long story short is Marvel ultimately ended up winning, and he's got to pay $17,000 in damage.
Oh, ow. That hurts.
But so out of all the things that Marvel have to worry about with Ghost Rider coming out this year, who owns the rights to the character is not one of them.
I'd like to point out that he's ordered to pay Marvel $17,000.
I know.
It's not exactly a very large sum of money, is it?
He's been selling T-shirts at conventions, Dave.
How did they come up with this number? You know, did they actually say, let us see your receipts? How much did you make? We want it all. All right. I'm just going to quickly mention on this article, and those who go to the show notes will find this article. There's a cover for Marvel Spotlight on Ghost Rider. I love the caption. It goes, is he alive or dead?
Legend is born. The most supernatural superhero of all.
And I like the fact that this is a legend is born, but they've just asked, is he alive or dead? Well, if he's been born, he must be alive. Anyway, it's a contradiction. Anyway, all right, let's move on.
Marvel Spotlight on grammar.
On grammar. Now, this next one has got me fascinated.
Well, actually, I put this story in partly because it jumped out at me because of its content, but also because we did a Garth Ennis story last week on the show with Punisher. Welcome back, Frank. And Garth Ennis, Eisner Award-winning writer who's done Punisher Max, Preacher, The Boys, Battlefields, Hellblazer, and Hitman.
Do we see a common thread with all of that?
Little kind of bloody.
And adult, you know, we're looking at very adult titles here.
Very adult titles. Kids writer. He's writing a book, illustrated book for children called Earth, or ERF, or Earth. So it's a darkly comic story of, it's not at all. It's apparently an evolutionary tale that follows four primordial animals as they emerge from the ocean and embark upon a journey through the ancient world. And then they just, shoot each other in the brains, I imagine.
So it's the film, it's the comic book version of Spore. Remember that computer?
Yes, yeah, exactly. I've got a picture of it here. It's like the most un-Ennis-y thing at all. And in the link that we'll have in the show notes, there's a little video that goes with it as well.
So he was obviously sitting there playing Spore and went, I think there's a game. I think there's a comic in this.
Possibly. Or maybe he was just tripping one day. Who knows?
Well, that could be possible too. That's a very odd thing for Garth Ennis to do. Not that that is out of left field.
Now, David, you've got one last story for us.
I do. Look, I've got this was thrown at me literally just before we started recording. My wife goes, did you see this? It's from BBC News, and it's Alan Moore talking about Anonymous's rise, the hacker group.
Yeah.
And basically, he was asked by BBC what he thought of the fact that Anonymous uses the Guy Fawkes mask as one of their symbols, and they seem to be heavily influenced by his comic book V for Vendetta. And so Alan Moore, in typical weirdo Alan Moore style, living in his wooden log cabin out in the woods, basically wrote this thesis on the history of... of radicals who use, you know, who are like Guy Fawkes and so forth, who want to go out and you know, subvert the government and all this sort of stuff. And he goes on all the way from revolution 1605 and the revolutionary times. He goes through this whole long article, but it's at the very end Alan Moore gets his last little jab in there, where he basically says, as for the ideas tentatively proposed in that dystopian fantasy 30 years ago, I'd be lying if I didn't admit that whatever usefulness they afford modern radicalism is very satisfying. So after all of the history lesson, he's basically saying, yeah, I think it's kind of cool that they're out there. So thank you very much for that, Alan.
You're Alan.
David, go back to your shack.
We're running way over time, so I think we should get into some movie news.
Sure. Where did I kick through this really fast?
Yeah, sure. Okay, one of the things we're going to do this week is...
slow down. All right. Okay, so tell me now, I'm very, very jealous because you went to a special screening of some preview footage for...
The Amazing Spider-Man.
Bastard. Sorry.
I'll play a quick clip because the trailer was out this week, and I'll just play a quick clip just to get us into a Spidey mood.
Okay.
How did you get out there?
Fire escape.
It's 20 stories.
Your doorman's intimidating. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker.
Not much to tell, really.
Peter lives with his aunt and uncle. Did you catch that spider guy yet?
No, but we will. This guy wears a mask like an outlaw.
I think he's trying to do something maybe the police can't.
Can't?
You know, if you're gonna steal cars, don't dress like a car thief.
You a cop?
You seriously think I'm a cop? In a skin tie, red and blue suit.
Who are you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look, I gotta tell you, that trailer took me completely off guard.
Yeah, look, I did. We went to the screening. We got to see the trailer in 3D was the first thing they showed us.
Yep.
And we could have watched it again and again and again. It was very, very cool. And it's, you know, this was an event that took place in 13 cities around the world. Sydney was the only city in Australia that got to see this.
Was it the same footage all around the world?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And first of all, we got to see the trailer in 3D, and then in a non-3D, and it wasn't completely finished. Format was a bit of a sizzle reel. Ooh. That showed highlights from the movie, and it was good because it wasn't anything really spoilery. It was just kind of like a really extended trailer.
Cool.
And so we got to see a scene. We saw a few complete scenes. We started off, we saw a scene with Flash Thompson, who was played by Chris Silker, who you interviewed.
A lovely young man.
For Shark Knight.
Yeah, a lovely young man.
And apparently in the scene, he's basically beating up this kid and he's demanding that Peter Parker takes photos of it. And Peter says no. And he gets himself beaten up and he explains it away to Uncle Ben. Later on, Peter fights back, presumably with his powers at this stage. And it's a familiar scene with Uncle Ben coming to the school and saying, look, you know, I had to leave work early for this. Now I have to change shifts and I have to work later tonight. And you kind of suspect where you know that's going.
The guilt.
So yes. It'll be a guilt thing for Peter.
At least it's not the lame I'm going to the library excuse this time.
Yeah, exactly. the other thing is you also see shortly after that a nice little scene between Gwen Stacy and Peter, Gwen Stacy being played by Emma Stone. And it's got a really nice vibe to it, and I really liked that. It was just a really nice back-and-forth, awkward teenage conversation between the two of them.
Well, that's great to hear because I really like Emma Stone, so...
And no, I really enjoyed it. They've got a great chemistry together, and I think that this is Mark Webb, of course. He did 500 Days of Summer, and you can see that's why they brought him on, to do those character moments. Mm. And another great character moment, you're going to get a lot of stuff with Dennis Leary, but you see a slightly more extended scene where you see it in the trailer, and we just heard it in the clip then, where Captain Stacy is, you know, talking to Peter about the value of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, Captain Stacy is the kind of J. Jonah Jameson figure in this film.
Well, and that's interesting because we were talking about it. I was saying, you know, it's interesting that J. Jonah Jameson isn't in the film. Doesn't exist. And we were talking about it. I was saying that the focus really will be on the Dennis Leary character, and you couldn't have two Jonah Jameson characters.
It would just
be too much.
And they're very wise because the other thing is, well, they've got the actual villain, which is going to be Lizard, or which is the mutated form of Dr. Connors, played by the wonderful Risa Farns.
Anonymous, I have a lot of time for.
So. Oh, absolutely. I think he'll make a great villain. Now, we didn't see huge amounts of the Lizard. We saw lots of arms and things and little, you know, and obscured shots and things because obviously not all the effects are finished yet. But it's you start getting a lot of hints in there. You start getting hints about this attaché case that Peter's father left behind, and little bits and pieces. Maybe where he starts, you know, getting the ideas to build his web shooters and things like that.
And there's also hints to his genius in the trailer as well.
Exactly, and they really sort of hint at the fact that he's inherited his father's genius. We see a lot of wisecracking, which is so pleasing to see. We saw a little bit of that in the trailer with the "You really think I'm a cop?" and red and blue spandex kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot more of that in there. And if you love Spider-Man, it's because of the comedy and because of the wisecracks, and that's all in there. The action looks great. The actual movement of Spider-Man is amazing. Just the speed and the agility. It seems that they've blended the CG and the human bits well.
My understanding is there's actually a lot more real person, too, this time. So it's not quite as CG as last time. There's a lot of wire work and stuff like that being done.
And in fact, in the footage we saw, it wasn't finished, but there's a lot of scenes where people were still on wires.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. Look, I'm really buzzed about this now. It was kind of flying under the wire just a little bit because of the spectacle of Dark Knight Rises and the Avengers, but this has really taken over.
Well, I got to say that up until this new trailer, I was kind of hot and cold on this, like you. This trailer took me off guard because it actually showed that Mark Webb had a good handle on the action of it as well, and it just looks awesome. I mean, it really does look awesome.
Well, I think Sony are pretty confident about this, and so much that they actually gave us a free pass to come back and see the film.
Oh, really? Very nice.
When we left. And we got T-shirts as well. So, very nice.
Like, no, I said it once before, really, and I'll say it again. Bastard. All right, so there you go. Get that out of my system.
Now, we better move on. Look, the last two stories are very quick. One of them, because we're in a bit of a litigious story mode, apparently Robert Kirkman, the creator of Walking Dead, is being sued.
Why?
Well, apparently Michael Anthony Moore, who is alleging he's actually the co-creator of the Walking Dead comic.
Does he live in a cabin in the woods too? Or not that much?
Apparently, yeah. I think that's his photo in the link that we have here. has filed suit against his one-time partner, Robert Kirkman, accusing him of promissory fraud, breach of written contract, and other charges. So he claims that Kirkman persuaded him to assign his rights on Walking Dead and other properties to a limited liability corporation controlled by Kirkman, who allegedly hasn't shared any royalty or other payments for Walking Dead, etc., etc.
Well, if that's true, that sucks.
Well, yeah.
So
if he has done that, well, that's not good. But we'll see how this one turns out. But
he's seeking damages.
So look, this is just—it seems like a lot of this happens in the comic book industry because
I'm sure you know, at times like this, companies like AMC start to get a little bit shaky. It's
yeah,
like, what did we walk into here?
Yeah,
you know. Anyway,
well, I don't think Walking Dead will last too many more years.
It can't be going much longer. We're well past issue 90 at this point. And as far as the TV show is concerned, I would be surprised if they keep it going too many more seasons.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you know, there are some things that are meant to be, you know, comics born and comics stay. Now, the final story is it's really just an announcement from Fox, which is that after years and years and years of development, The Wolverine, the sequel to our film, actually co-host Josh Philpott's favorite film, X-Men Origins Wolverine, it's finally has a release date of July 26, 2013.
Well, I'm so glad. I was getting worried.
There's not many too many details. This is going to be based on the Chris Claremont, Frank Miller stuff. It'll be set in Japan. There'll probably be some Silver Samurai stuff in there. There'll be a lot of Japanese coolness.
Yeah,
it's going to go head to head with the 2013 summer blockbusters. Apparently, the other films being released that date will be the remake of Dirty Dancing and Walt Disney's Phineas and Ferb film.
Oh, well, there you go. There's some stiff competition out there, isn't
there? It might do well. But it's the same summer season that things like Man of Steel will be coming out.
Is that 2013? I thought that was this year. No, that's 2013, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting year next year. So certainly for comic book fans, next year is not going to be any lighter than it is this year.
No, and look, lest we forget, X-Men Origins Wolverine was a big hit.
Oh, yeah, look, it was a big hit. And anything, and again, it's one of those things. Marvel is going to keep playing the X-Men card because, Fox will keep playing the X-Men card because they want to retain the rights to it.
Absolutely, and they'll keep spinning stuff out. Let's not forget that they also have now announced X-Men Origins, which, if they do it at the same speed that they did the first X-Men Origins, that should be out next year, too.
Yeah.
Because Matthew Vaughn works really fast.
Maybe First Class.
First Class. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. What did I say?
X-Men Origins. Oh, just fair enough, because they've got three distinct series going on at the moment. There's the original X-Men series, which there's still, there were talks that they were going to do a fourth film in that series. I don't think that'll happen now.
I did hear about that, though. So
but that still gets getting kicked out of it, because, like, you know, people still kind of want to see Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Lauren Shuler Donner, the producer of the X-Men films, actually said, it can't be more than 3 or 4 months ago, that yes, there is definitely a script for X-Men 4 out there.
Well, so you've got the X-Men First Class series, which is started by Matthew Vaughn, and he's going to continue that. He's confirmed now to do the sequel. Yep. So that, and that's hot property as well, of course, because it's got the ubiquitous Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy in it. Mm. And then, and of course, the spin-off of the original things, which is the X-Men Origins Wolverine being, you know, one. And there's also talk of a Deadpool film coming out as well.
That's true. So, yeah, look, Fox is quite happy at the moment. There's also talk about them rebooting Daredevil. So that, you know, Fox, and the reboot of Fantastic Four. So Fox is happy right now.
Yeah, look, Fox have got the rights to some pretty big Marvel properties. And if they play their cards right, they can have as big an empire as maybe not quite as big an empire as Disney, Marvel Studios have got, but and Paramount has been building up. But they'll certainly, they've got enough characters there to really build their own little small universe.
They could if they decided to put them together, but nobody else has got the guts like Marvel has to do that.
Well, nobody else has got quite as many characters as Marvel.
That's true too. All right, let's.
David, it's time.
It is time. I think we need to do this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. And our pick of the week this week, Richard?
Is, I've forgotten. No, it's called Ratcat. Pick of the week this week is by Andy Diggle, and it's a DC Vertigo crime series book called Ratcatcher.
Ratcatcher. And when you mentioned this to me, I went, a what now? but it is a really, really damn good book.
Look, it's from DC's got a crime range that's had a few different books out, and one of them was by Ian Rankin. And there's another one that was there's a Hellblazer one, John Constantine one in there as well. Hmm. But this takes this one's written by New York Times bestselling writer Andy Diggle.
Now, what has Andy Diggle written? Do you know?
Green Arrow Year One.
Oh, there you go. Oh, I liked Green Arrow Year One. That was good. Why didn't I know that? I'm a moron, that's why.
What can I say? But yeah, no, look, I really liked his work on that, and it had a real gritty kind of realism to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is nothing if not gritty and realistic. And as you said before the show, David, it's got a definite sort of Walking Dead vibe to it as well, although it's got nothing to do with zombies.
No, and it may just be because of the very stark black and white artwork in it. I'm not sure what it is, but there's a real vibe that comes through as you're reading it. I was sitting there going, you kind of expect the zombies to come out at some point, you know what I mean?
I mean, look, the book is a magnificent story because it starts off, it sort of throws you right into the action and then doesn't really let up. Ooh. From there, the book starts with a burning house. Well, actually, no, it starts.
It starts
with the burning house
in a big wide vista of nothing.
Yeah, and you see a man emerging from the burning house who's been shot in the shoulder. Now, shortly afterwards, that man gets hit by a car, and then we see a detective turn up to the burning house, saying, "What the hell is going on here? You're ruining a crime scene. This is, in fact, a federal safe house for witness protection." Now, that's just the start of that's just page 26 of 190 pages.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I read this book with fascination because there are whole pages that go by without a word being spoken. There's these beautifully drawn panels, and the story is just carried along by these images. And all I could think all the way reading this was, I want to see this film.
Look, and yes, I do too, but in fact, it's almost like watching reading a film. In a sense as well. It's sort of the complete opposite to what that other story we were talking about earlier does. The Rat Catcher, the title, of course, refers to a peerless assassin, I guess, who specializes in silencing mob informants.
Yeah, and the belief is, and basically he's a myth. That the police department keeps basically saying that this person doesn't really exist, and the Federal Marshals Department have a 100% success rate with their people in witness protection, and they don't want to admit that this person could possibly exist, because if he did, then that would mean that they don't have 100%.
And the reason he's been able to maintain that and that mythical status is because every death he makes to look like an accident.
Exactly, very meticulously planned out so that they never suspect. And so our cop who shows up at this crime scene at the beginning, he's there because his partner was supposed to be there. And the belief from him is that his partner, it may have been the rat catcher who did this because his partner was investigating him or investigating the idea that the rat catcher might exist.
Now, David, did you guess before the end of this book who the rat catcher was?
Before it was revealed? I actually didn't. No, I actually didn't think, it was the person they said it was, because of course they, spoilers on this show, as always, we must always say that.
Although, and, having said that, David, I'm because this book is so new.
That's true. Actually, you're right. I'm kind of hesitant to say it.
I'm hesitant to give too many spoilers on this one. I'm going to treat this like a new release film.
I'll go with you on that, because I would like everybody to read this book, because I think it is a really good tale. But no, I didn't suspect who people suspected all the way through the issue. I thought that was too obvious. But I did not predict who it actually was.
And David, you were talking to me. We were coming out of a movie the other night, talking about this comic, and you said, "My God, there's a lot of twists in it."
Yes,
and it is. This is a pretzel of a comic. This one.
Every time you think you've got a handle on it, they change it.
I said to my partner Susan, because I was reading a little. I read a chunk of this before I went to work one morning, and stopped at a certain point, about 90 pages in, and said, I couldn't have stopped at a worse point, because they just made a major reveal about one character, and then 3 pages later, that reveal revealed another reveal. You know,
yes.
I was like, "Oh, I have to keep reading. I can't go to work."
And every
now.
Every time you start to think, "Okay, I'm comfortable with this character or whoever this character might be," something then happens, and you go, "Oh, damn it!"
Yeah, look, there's a massive body count in this book. I'll say that up front.
Yep.
Much like, and I think that's another comparison with The Walking Dead, that you get to know and love characters very quickly, and then wish you hadn't, because you lose them very quickly as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's probably one of the closest comparisons. Andy Diggle takes no prisoners in this book.
No, and the violence is very, very graphic.
It is, yeah.
When he cuts loose, he really cuts loose.
But as you said, there's long, long scenes where it's just people talking in offices. And then you'll cut to something like out in the West Texas Badlands, and there's these rednecks shooting coyote. And there's some really graphic violence there. And then the manner in which they kill the coyote there later comes back in the book. And then, and because you've seen that earlier, it has all the more impact. As well. It's such a beautifully constructed book. And I'd like to know how long he was working on this before it came out, because obviously this is a one-off book that probably had no pressure of deadlines of time and so forth, like a weekly comic.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like something that was commissioned. It feels like something that they got together, they created, and said, "What do you think?"
Yeah,
you know, and it's got a lot of love behind it, you know. Now, I've got to say, I really, really like a couple of characters here that I just want to talk about very quickly.
Sure.
They're introduced about around a page, 120-odd something, which is, of course, the Rednecks, which is the guy, the Marine and his sniper rifle.
Yes.
Who I think is just terrific. And, of course, the big old good old boy who runs the snake. Who runs
Rollins,
who runs the snake ranch.
Yeah.
I love his red phone. He goes, should you be getting a call on the red phone? He goes, no,
I love that scene.
No, I should not. I just love the way they're written.
I know, it's great. And there's some language in here that we can't use, but it's just so... it's just so seamless. It sounds so natural. Everything you read, you can hear their voices clearly in your head. It is such a wonderful thing. And look, you know, it's got a few sort of crime story cliches in there. You know, they've brought the body in, they're investigating. Is it the right body? Oh, we found this clue. We better go off, twist, that kind of thing. But in a way that doesn't matter, he's used a very familiar storyline, which is the kind of the mole within the organization and made this very and built upon it. So you've got this very complex and layered story that as I said, really does surprise you at every turn. And just so detailed as well. Like even when they're driving from one place to the next, you've got this scene of a big sort of a southern highway and just like, you know, the shops and big kind of blank concrete slabs in the background. It just looks like, it feels like he's created a world and then just plonked some characters in it.
Yeah, you know, I agree. 100%. The depth of detail in his artwork. Now, who drew this? This is drawn by...
This one's drawn by Victor Ibanez.
Victor, the depth of his artwork is fabulous. And it's actually, in many ways, much better than The Walking Dead. So we talked about how the comparisons to The Walking Dead, this beautifully rich black and white, and you can actually see detail all the way off in the background. He's actually got people, he's got names of shops and stuff, even in scenes that are completely irrelevant to there being any detail there. It's fantastic.
Like, I mean, there's a scene in a chicken coop, for example, that's really detailed. Yes. Now, I really like, there was a character I really liked there, which was the mother of one of the people that was in the witness protection program that's gone missing, presumably killed. And she starts off when she's introduced, and this is one of the things that I like about this book. When she's introduced, when the two cops show up, she says, oh yeah, my chickens, they were kicking up a terrible racket this morning. I was sure there must have been someone prowling around out there. I called the sheriff's department and said they'd get a task force right on it. And they're like, yeah, that's what we're here for, man. We'll get right on that. And then he goes out to investigate something else he's interested in. But a few pages later, she's sort of, this dottery old woman is virtually yelling at them, saying, you people, you didn't lift a finger when Dwayne was in trouble. Get the hell out of my house. It's kind of like, I think it's those those surprising character elements that there's no character that's a caricature.
No, and there is a backstory to everybody, even if we don't know what it is.
And you get that within, you know, a few pages or a few panels. You can see that this person is not just the dotty old woman who happened to see something. She's a dotty old woman who happened to see something, but also has this whole backstory involving the FBI, and she doesn't particularly like them. Mm. You know, and I really like there's little touches like that all throughout the book,
Another great example of that sort of character work is right near the beginning of the book with the two cops looking at the burning house.
Yes.
And just talking about the bets on what would cause the fire. And the guy's going, air freshener? He goes, 10 will get you one. It was one of them air freshener doohickeys kind of plug into the electric. He says, they overheat, melt, go up in flames. Happens all the time. Lorraine got an email about them. Who the hell's Lorraine? You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
We just kind of throw names out there. We've got these whole backstories, you know, which I just love. And we get to know these two cops, even though they're just these two little redneck cops sitting there looking at a fire. There's detail behind what they're actually talking about.
You know, look, it's wonderful. And then there's a scene later in flashback, and they're characters that we know are dead because we know they turned up dead later. But in a short few pages where we spend with the characters, he's already created this whole relationship between two or three of these characters. Mm. So it's still shocking when they're actually killed, even though we know for a fact that they're dead by this state.
And it's not even shocking as to know who did it at that point. It's just shocking to see how it's all done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a terrific read. And I can't recommend it enough. Really, I can't.
This is a really small book. Look, this is only about $20 to go and buy as a trade paperback. You can get it cheaper. I've seen it cheaper. It's actually a smaller trade paperback size than you would normally think. It's probably a little bit bigger than a soft cover book. It's almost manga sized. You know, they're kind of slightly larger manga sized book.
Yeah, well, I mean, what is it? It's the total page count on this thing is 190 pages.
Yeah. So it's available as a little hardcover, and it's one of those things. It's part of a line of DC Comics that they've done, and I'd be interested in reading some of these other ones a little bit later on. Mm. There's an Ian Rankin one called Dark Entries, and it's a John Constantine book.
I'd be interested in that. Yeah,
and that's Ian Rankin's a famous crime writer. He's known for the Inspector Rebus mysteries, which were filmed and made into television. But he's you know, the ongoing books are really big bestsellers amongst the set that enjoys those kind of murder mysteries. The other one, which looks really good, is called Filthy Rich, and it's by one of our favorite writers, Brian Azzarello.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool too.
So we'll definitely have to see if we can find that one. There's a whole bunch of there's a whole Vertigo crime one. There's one by Peter Milligan called The Bronx Kill. There's one by Jason Starr called The Chill and Area 10. But the first three that I mentioned there have come out quite recently. And this Ratcatcher quite literally came out last week. So we just wanted to jump on that chance because it really is a completely surprising book because I didn't know anything about it except the title. And I just tasked David in finding me a copy.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I didn't see it coming at all. It's a
So look, you know, we can't recommend this one highly enough. I think so.
I think this is a must read to get you away from capes and to show that there is real depth to comic books.
One thing I will say, and I don't want to spoil the ending, but how great was that final line? In the book.
Without actually saying what the final line was, absolutely. Yeah. It's just
we have a character who has
it's actually the reaction to the line, I think.
It is. And it was the reaction to the line, and then it pulls out and you see the kind of reaction to the scene. The whole, and then it's kind of like you can almost it was a movie you can imagine Finn.
Yeah, that's right. And the credits roll at that point. You just go, oh man! You know?
Yeah. And it's frustrating because normally we would do this spoilers and all, and we would talk about it. But I really, really, really can't, in all good conscience, do that with this book because it is a book that you will need to.
You want to discover
to be surprised at every turn with.
You want to discover this book as well as we discovered this book.
Yeah,
and I know we gave everybody a week to read it and stuff, but really, there's a lot of people who listen to us that don't read the books. They're just kind of listening to the show. I'm hoping you'll go out and get this book.
Yes. And then, look, you know, and maybe if DC feels like it gives us a kickback for every copy sold as a result of hearing our wonderful glowing report.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Hey, DC, we'd like you to be a sponsor of the show.
I've noticed that Andy Diggle is on Twitter. I'd love to chat with him about this book. So if we can use my power of the tweets to get a dialogue happening with him, I'll chase that up.
Let's see if we can get his attention. What do you reckon?
Let's see what we can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see if the show gets his attention. And tweets, if you're out there, let Mr. Diggle know about this episode.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Yeah, let's start a Twitter campaign. Everybody listening to the show, tweet Andy Diggle.
He's just at Andy Diggle.
Fantastic. I'll be on that tonight.
Here we go.
Okay, Richard, what is next week's read?
Next week, we thought we'd go a little left of center, David.
Just a little?
One of my favorite. What was that?
Just a little?
Just a little left of center. It's one of my favorite comics that most people will be familiar with from the world of computer games. They've had several fantastic computer games. Sam and Max.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Sam and Max is not a comic book I've ever read.
Hey, look, I love Steve Purcell, who did the book, worked with the Hellboy creator, Mike Mignola, a fair bit.
Right.
And they have a very similar sense of humor, and some of their art style is similar, but they both kind of have their own sort of thing going. And I think Steve Basile did artwork for Mignola a few times. So there is that kind of historical value. The Sam and Max comics, if you enjoy the humor in the games, this sort of takes it up another level. What we're going to look at next week is a collection that came out a few years ago called Sam and Max Surfing the Highway, which is a collection not just of all the individual comics that they did, because there were a lot of little one-offs and bits and pieces, but some of the comics that appeared in as backups in other books. And also what's really good that they've included in the collection are these kind of single one-off one-page things that were included in the back of things like the old LucasArts and Lucasfilm Games magazines, and they're often parodies of a lot of major Lucasfilm films, so including Indiana Jones and Star Wars. So they do a lot of things like that, and they're just kind of nice little bonus stories. So
I'm curious. I'll have a look at it.
This will be a fun one to look at. David, just because we've got a little bit of extra time left, I'm just going to tease people, I think, with some of the titles we're thinking of looking at.
Sure, in the upcoming episode.
So some of the, and if you have one of these ones that you'd particularly like to see us do earlier than others, please let us know. And that's just the email address is just comics@geekactually.com.
That's correct.
That's the one.
And you can also remember, you can also voicemail us at what's the voicemail number?
It's on the website.
I'll find that while you talk.
Yeah, we're trying to look some of the ones we're looking at as the aforementioned Buffy season 8. The slightly more somber Mouse, the classic Holocaust.
Now, when we do that, do you think we're going to do Mouse 1 and 2 or just the 1?
I think we'll start with Mouse 1.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. the brand new Avengers X Sanction, which hasn't quite finished yet. There's one out called One Model Nation, which is by the Dandy Warhols lead singer Courtney Taylor Taylor. Know nothing about it. Just came out this week, so could be an interesting one to look at. We're looking at some of the season one stuff that Marvel's doing. Fantastic Four season one, and also in the lead up to two big films coming out this year, John Carter. We're looking at some of the prequel comics that they've put out for that, and of course we'll look at some of the Marvel Secret War stuff, both incarnations of Secret War, in the lead up to the Avengers film. So if any of those tickle your fancy than others,
I would actually have to say that be prepared, people, for prequel mania this year, because we'll be doing Spider-Man stuff before Spider-Man comes out. Of course, we'll be touching on the Avengers before the Avengers come out. We'll be doing Batman stuff, of course.
You better believe there'll be more Batman.
Oh, you better believe it. So yeah, and we're probably going to be doing some collected works of Ghost Rider, of course, before Ghost Rider comes out. So yeah, we've got it coming up.
Don't worry, folks. We got this whole thing covered. We're going behind the panels.
Absolutely. And the voicemail number, if you do want to leave a voicemail, and if your voicemail is interesting and literally under a minute, we'll play it on the show. It's Sydney number, so it's 02-8011-3167. And if you are cheap like me and don't want to make a phone call, you can actually just use a Skype ID, Geek Actually, all one word, and it'll get to us that way as well. All right.
David, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, thank you for asking, Richard. People can find me at geekactually.com. And if you want to find me on Twitter, some people have been asking about that, because I always just give out geekactually.com and say, hit the follow us button. But there are people who just don't want to even click that far. So my Twitter handle is @DavidMcVeigh, all one word. McVeigh is spelled MCVAY.
And my Twitter handle's @DVDBits, but my website is therealbits.com. That's therealbits.com, and it's awesome, much like geekactually.com.
It is a damn fine website.
We've both got damn fine websites.
Why, thank you, sir.
Now, enough of this mutual backpatting. Again, next week, we will be back with Sam and Max Surfing the Highway. You can sit down. It's a lot of fun, and we'll be going through that in detail. There aren't really any spoilers in the book per se, but we'll be going through it, spoilers and all, next week.
Absolutely, and we should say that all those titles we just mentioned are like a hodgepodge of titles. We are going to start putting that into an order over the next couple of weeks, and that'll all be put up onto that wonderful page that Richard set up, so that you can read ahead. So now that you've got an idea of the kind of books we're looking at, we will be putting those into an order soon. Now, there was one more thing I should mention, Richard. We do have another show.
We do.
We do. And we should mention that you can also get all your film news, if you're a film buff, by shooting over to the... Well, you can either go to our super feed, which is the Geek Actually super feed on iTunes, or you can go to Film Actually or Behind the Panels. You're obviously on Behind the Panels already. Film Actually has two shows that come out, which is Film Actually, which where we review movies, and the slightly more serious of the two shows. And then there's Film Actually News, where we don't make the news, but we make fun of it. And we look at entertainment news for the week and kind of have a bit of a chuckle with it. And
it's fast, loud, under 30 minutes.
Or your money back, absolutely. And t-shirts are coming.
Oh, yes, you gotta believe it.
You gotta believe that. All right, well, I think that's a show, Richard.
David, as always, it's been a pleasure.
It has been absolutely fantastic fun, and I will read this comic book you're throwing at me.
I like to keep you on your toes, David.
Absolutely. See you next week, Richard.
See you, David.